Edge with Chris Graham.
Hi, that's me, Chris Graham, and we're going to talk some wrestling here on this podcast. I love podcasts. I've said this on other of our podcast, Hero Street Knowledge podcast, that when I run, I often listen to podcasts just because it allows me to learn. Hopefully, I usually run between 6 and 7 miles. It takes me roughly 45 minutes to an hour, depending on the day and how fast I'm running and everything else, to get around. And I can use that time to listen to music, which sometimes I do, but for the most part, I love listening to good podcasts. And I usually listen, of all things, to wrestling podcasts. I'm a guy who I've worked in the wrestling business for a while. It's been a while since I've done that, but I love – there are some good ones out there. Dave Meltzer has some good ones, the Wrestling Observer newsletter. You have to subscribe to those. Those can be kind of hard to download, so there are some issues there. Actually, Jim Cornette's podcast I'm a fan of. You have to kind of filter through the bombast, but there you can learn some things. Not just about wrestling, though there is obviously a lot to learn from the wrestling side of things, but also just, I think, marketing. To me, wrestling is marketing because you're getting people to buy into the idea that this, what everybody knows is fake thing going on in front of them, is worth paying a lot of money to see. So as a result, I listen to a lot of wrestling podcasts. Not a lot of good ones. There's as many wrestling podcasts almost at this day and age as there are wrestlers. It feels like there are thousands of them. Not a lot of good ones. And this is probably not a good one either, but I'm going to try. I've been off and on for months, trying to do whatever I can do to provide some sense to what goes on in the wrestling business with my analytical mind, I guess. Also, the fact that I have had some work in the business, and I watch enough of it, I might as well get some value out of that time I spend watching it. So the first thing I would jump into this week, it would be the kind of a review from several days ago now of the Full Gear pay-per-view put on by All Elite Wrestling, AEW. It was a good show. I debated as to whether or not to actually purchase the show. It's a, if you're a WWE Network subscriber, I was for 5 years. I've famously, and when I say famously, I wrote a column about a month ago, going into detail about why I was ending my subscription to the WWE Network, the storylines and the complete fantastic run that WWE is trying to put together now with all this silly soap opera stuff. I didn't use the word fantastic in a positive way there, if you didn't catch. It's turned me away from that product. And so you're used to, though, if you have that subscription or have had it in the past, it's $9.99 per month. And you're used to the idea that you can get WrestleMania and Survivor Series and all the pay-per-views for $9.99 per month, and you get a lot of other things too. AEW right now doesn't offer anything of that nature. And so if you want to buy one of what they're saying is going to be a quarterly pay-per-view, it's $49.95. Now, I guess if it's four times a year, $49.95, that's going to be roughly $200. If you're paying $10 a month times 12 months, that's $120. You're paying, for apples-to-apples comparison, you are paying $80 more a year for AEW's product than you would be for WWE's product. I think it's worth it. It's a better product, generally speaking. I'm afraid, as a AEW fan, that maybe the bloom is coming off the rose, though, as far as the company right now. The ratings are down. I hate to say, they were 1.4 million for their first show. I'm going to say ratings, the numbers or the viewer numbers are down. That's the most important thing. 1.4 million roughly for their first show, which I didn't even see on TV because I went to the first show. It was in D.C. My good buddy Brian and I drove up to D.C. for that show, saw it live. We're hooked. We were already hooked with the All In and All Out pay-per-views from the last couple of years that let the foundation blocks for what has become AEW wrestling. But that first show, it drew a lot. And it's still I keep refreshing my internet here as I'm doing this podcast because the first 5 weeks NXT WWE put NXT up against AEW to start the Wednesday Night Wars, as we're calling them now. AEW's beaten NXT all 5 weeks, but the gap is narrow. It was a pretty significant gap, and actually, when I did the math, AEW's lost right about 40% of its audience from week 1 to week 5. And that was not good either because, you know, they were at $1.4 million on October 2nd for their show, the go-home show, as we call it in the trade, for Full Gear, had 822,000 viewers. And no excuse, no World Series competition, no, you know, nothing like that. Just low number. So I'm wondering again if the bloom is coming off the rose for AEW. It would be a shame because if you watch this show, and if you didn't, I recommend that you do, you see what this company has. Chris Jericho and Cody in what, you know, I guess titularly the main event, the lights out match with Jon Moxley and Kenny Omega was technically, and I'm using air quotation marks as I'm talking right here. You can't see that, but I am. That was an unsanctioned match, so it didn't count. But the Cody Jericho match was great. Had some great intrigue with MJF, the corner man for Cody, thrown in the towel. If you watched the show last night, you know that MJF then turned on Cody. And so that sets up the next bit for those two guys. And it felt artificial anyway to have MJF working with Cody as a face because MJF is such a good heel. You saw that last night if you watched the show. Put him on the mic. Just give him a microphone and tell him to start talking, and it's interesting. And he and Jericho had a classic back and forth last night on Dynamite on Wednesday night. So, but now, you know, MJF is no longer saddled with having to be a face. He can talk trash all he wants, and a brewing feud with Cody is going to be fun for the next, hopefully, few months. Jericho gets the win, and now Jericho is looking for a dance partner, so we'll have to see who emerges next for Chris Jericho. And last night didn't give us any indication. I'll talk more about Jericho and what he did last night later in this podcast, but from Full Gear, he stands tall. You also had both the other titles were defended last night. SCU, SoCal Uncensored, retained in a three-way with the Lucha Brothers and Private Party. Private Party took the fall. That way, no heat on Luchas. You didn't want your new tag champs to lose already. You don't want to have Helter Skelter titles, basically. And so we can keep SCU and Luchas as rivals. Private Party takes the fall, but they get elevated just by being in a match of that caliber. And this young team looks really good. They've already got an upset win over the Young Bucks. Now they've been, you know, been a part of a three-way on a pay-per-view for the world titles. So that's great. Santana and Ortiz beat the Young Bucks. You know, I'm loving the Young Bucks here. You know, we know that Nick and Matt Jackson are just like Cody. They're also part of the booking committee. But they're not booking themselves to win these matches. Kenny Omega, also part of the booking committee, he lost his match with Moxley. In a false count anywhere, no DQ, no rules, unsanctioned lights out match. That was one of the better ones of that nature that I've seen. Hangman Adam Page had a mini upset of Pac. Then Pac last night got revenge, and I think he now has the series lead in that one 2-1 if you want to count that. But you know, they're trading wins back and forth. I said last night, when I was watching the show last night, I could watch those two guys wrestle every week and it wouldn't bother me at all. It wouldn't get bored. It wouldn't get stale at all. The only match I thought that you could have done without from the card last week, Sean Spears, Joey Janela, just didn't make any sense. Sean Spears had heat from this summer when he hit the chair shot heard round the world on Cody Rhodes, but that has not materialized into anything. And Spears, it's odd. This poor guy, no matter where he goes, doesn't seem like he can get over. You know, he's a talented guy. He's good on the mic. He's good in the ring, and just nothing seems to work for him. He did get the win over Joey Janela in that match, but just not a lot for either guy. I think we could have done without that one. And the show ended at about 11:45. If we cut a couple matches out, we would have been around 11 o'clock. It would have been a lot better show. The Moxley Omega match was one of the better weapons matches you'll ever see. And when I say this, it reminded me of Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano from NXT. They had a couple matches like this. In fact, Moxley stole a bit from Ciampa when he pulled the mat up and left the exposed wood underneath, and then did his finisher, one Omega. One that reminded me of Ciampa and Gargano from one of their pay-per-views from a couple years ago. But great match. Just, you know, lots of intrigue. And because it was a lights-out match and Tony Khan, the owner of AEW, said off camera that the match would not count, kind of figured maybe Moxley would get the win, but, you know, it was uncertain. And when saying it wouldn't count, AEW is making a big deal about one-loss records. They, in fact, put them up on graphics whenever you see a performer out there. And both their singles record, their tag record, their overall record, that kind of thing. Saying it didn't count means this, you know, that the loss wouldn't count against whoever lost this match in terms of their desire to compete for titles. And so, that, again, that made me think that Omega probably wasn't going to lose it, but Moxley got the win, and it was, you know, it was worth the, that match alone was worth the price. That match, the Jericho Cody match, maybe the Young Bucks match with Santana and Ortiz, you know, those were all matches that you, if they'd have been on any card, if any WWE card, any New Japan card, you'd have said, you know, that should have been the main event. Those were all great matches. The best part of last of that pay-per-view, at least, you know, nothing silly, nothing stupid. You know, you had Janela, but he wrestled a conventional match. It wasn't a weapons match. He didn't do his silly stuff. You didn't have any librarians out there, no Dark Order, no Best Friends. The roster was what the best they have to offer, and that was the best show they could, you know, possibly put on, and have really no one there to criticize and say, well, yeah, but you ran this guy out and he did a dick flip or, you know, something like that. Like he saw early, you know, after the All In pay-per-view back in, I think that was in May. You know, there were some, the AEW then we knew was going to have the TV show launching in October. And so you had a few months in between, you have to keep the interest in the product. And they did some, BR Live. The one was, I think there may have been actually one pay-per-view type event, with a smaller price tag, but then, some free events as well. And you did see a sprinkling of these, you know, the lesser talents or whatever the case may be. And the more sideshow type of talents, you didn't see that on Full Gear. You saw the, you know, from top to bottom, except for again, the Spears Janela match, and the way the show was presented, that it would have been more logical for that to have been the opener. It would have been more logical for that to have actually just been sort of the pre-show match, you know, with the free match to help you get into the product. You know, everything else was, you know, a WrestleMania quality card, and I was very impressed with that. We'll talk again, like I said, more later about Chris Jericho and something odd that I noticed last night on the show, and I think it'll be something that can maybe be instructive. I got the numbers here. Let's see. So the headline suggests, let's see here. So Dynamite went up from 822,008 to 957, so a nice jump there. Doing the quick math in my head, that's 135,000 over 8. That'd be about a 16-17% increase. NXT actually went down. NXT had been gaining. Last week had got up to 813, so they were within 10,000 viewers of Dynamite, but dropped back, 750,000 viewers on the USA Network. So more than 200,000 viewer win for Dynamite, sixth straight win in the ratings, and just under a million for Dynamite, which I think it's got to be a good sign. That's got to be the strength of Full Gear. From that was Saturday night. WWE runs its pay-per-views on Sunday, and then they have Raw on Monday. So, you know, the overlap between that Sunday audience, the Monday audience, the interest that you might have can carry over the next night. Whereas for AEW, they had to, you know, get your attention on Saturday and keep it all the way to Wednesday. So, and AEW ranked number 5 in the cable top 150, NXT ranked 22. AEW was 37 in overall viewership, NXT was 41. So they were neck and neck in that respect. So good news there for AEW fans, if, you know, if you're one of those, I am. Some WWE news to get into. I've mentioned I'm just not into the product right now, to say the least, and I'm kind of sad about that. I'm, you know, I was an early subscriber to the WWE Network. I signed up for WWE Network 2 weeks before it launched. And the product has turned me off the last few months. I've noticed that I've not been wanting to watch the pay-per-view shows. I've been skipping the Raw and SmackDown shows. And so it got to a point, even though it's only $9.99 per month, it made me say, it's 10 bucks I could spend on something else. I don't need to keep it here just in case WWE gets relevant again. I can just re-up if that becomes the case. And I think they're getting further away from that being the case. I mentioned in that column that I wrote a couple weeks ago, late October, early November. So just a couple weeks ago. I mentioned what led me to say, you know what, I'm done. It was the silly angle, Seth Rollins and Bray Wyatt, and I didn't even watch the angle. All I had to do was read about it, and that was enough for me to say, look, I'm not watching. Now I'm not even interested in reading anymore. I'm done. Where Seth Rollins burned down the Firefly Funhouse. And I can't believe I wrote that. I can't believe I'm even saying that now, weeks later, that this is something considered legitimate to get fans interested in your product. Seth Rollins closing out a Raw by burning down the Firefly Funhouse. And wow, I got to watch next week now. No, that's not the case. You know, I like to say, and AEW kind of ventured a little out of the bounds I'd like to see when they had Jake Hager, attacked Dustin Rhodes out in the parking lot. You know, that strains the bounds of credulity, where, you know, if that happens in real life, you're arrested. You know, I like to think that we don't have to suspend our disbelief enough to just see things that aren't part of normal society used as motivation for two guys to have, or two teams or whatever, to have a match. It should be as simple as, you're there, I think I'm better than you, and then I tell you that, and then you tell me, no, I'm better than you, and you get in a ring and settle your differences. It should be that simple. I mean, honestly, last night, that the whole Jericho MJF Cody thing was that. It was Jericho repeatedly saying to MJF, do you want to be part of the inner circle? MJF saying, do you want me to be part of the inner circle? Them both declaring their undying enmity for Cody Rhodes, Cody coming out, they both attack him. I mean, that makes sense. That's what you'd expect if there's, you know, two guys in a training gym who want to prove who's the best. They talk trash and they eventually try to prove who's the best. It shouldn't be, I'm gonna burn down your Firefly Funhouse. They had another stupid angle on WWE this week, and it's a long ongoing angle. The Lana Rusev Bobby Lashley angle. To explain it, you know, if you're a wrestling fan, you know the story already, so I'm not even going to explain it. It's just dumb. You know, Rusev and Lashley, just put them in the ring. Again, have one say, I think I'm better than you. The other respond back, I'm better than you, and let them go at it. Lashley is a legit MMA fighter. Rusev's a former powerlifting champion. Let's put him out there and see who's a better guy. We don't have to pretend like Rusev's real-life wife, Lana, is having an affair with Lashley, and that's the cause of it all. And they've been doing this for weeks, and now WWE touting that they had 1.4 million views on YouTube for the latest crappy angle on this. Man, they're not getting it. You know, they're turning people like me off, and I looked at their ratings for Raw this week, and they barely had 2 million viewers for a product that, you know, at its height 20 years ago now, I understand, you know, it would be close to 10 million viewers a week. And even as recently as 2 years ago, was averaging 3 million. And when the number went below 3 million, it felt like holy hell was happening. So now they're barely getting two. And they're wondering why people are unsubscribing from the network and why they're not watching Raw and SmackDown. It's because of this crap. The one thing they did right this week, and it wasn't even something that WWE did right this week, but WWE is now a part of the Fox family, because the rights to SmackDown purchased by Fox earlier this year. The show, you know, made its debut on Fox back early October. And as part of that deal, Fox wanted to create, and has created now, a show called Backstage, basically an interview show. It's a sports approach to wrestling. And it's interviews, it's sort of analysis, whatever you want to say, not getting very good ratings. And so, but there had been talk for weeks that Fox Sports 1 is where this airs. So SmackDown airs on main Fox, but then you know, this backstage product, airs on Fox Sports 1. Fox's attempt to emulate ESPN, which has failed miserably from that standpoint, but it is on cable network, cable systems across the country. So it's at least theoretically got the chance to get a lot of viewers. So the idea of hiring CM Punk to be an analyst and contributor to this backstage show has been floated for a while. Well, this week, again, I'm not watching the product, so I didn't know this until I read it, but CM Punk made a special appearance, surprise appearance, at the very end of this week's backstage, and apparently now will be a regular contributor as expected. I get a phone call from a buddy of mine who's a lapsed wrestling fan and says, so who's CM Punk going to wrestle first? I had to break the bad news to him that he's actually an employee of Fox, not an employee of WWE. WWE, of course, would have had to consent to have him be a part of the show, but we know that CM Punk left WWE, actually, ironically, around the time WWE Network launched in early 2014, and he's been gone from the mat game, that mat game, for 5 years. He attempted very unsuccessfully, to say the least, to become a UFC fighter with no background in wrestling, in actual amateur wrestling or boxing or any of the combat sports. He went 0-2, losing to a couple of tomato cans that were set up for him to knock over, and that career is ended now. So no, it's not like we're going to see CM Punk in a WWE ring. We're seeing him on a TV show involving WWE. That might be enough. Also, word from Dave Meltzer from behind the scenes that AEW really tried hard, pressed hard. Tony Khan actually met, we're told, from Meltzer with CM Punk, offered him a lot of money. And CM Punk turned a lot of money down to do this. So it may be the case he just doesn't want to wrestle anymore. He'd rather, at this stage in his life, he's in his late 30s, you know, not have to go out there and endure the grind. And that tells me that WWE is not going to be an option for him. He left in 2014 because of the grind from the travel, you know, 5-6 days a week, 50 weeks a year was what led him to leave WWE in the first place. He could be a part-timer. Brock Lesnar has made a career out of that. We have to assume Randy Orton, who's re-upped with WWE, will continue to be a part-time performer for the company as well. But again, I don't know if I see it. I don't know if I see the interest there from CM Punk to get back in the ring. So last little bit here. We'll go back to AEW now. And I talked about Chris Jericho and the odd ending. Well, I didn't talk about this, but there was an odd ending to the AEW Dynamite show last night. And you might have seen it and not thought about it, but I want to tell you why in wrestling booking that was a terrible way to end the show. The match was SoCal Uncensored, Scorpio Sky and Frankie Kazarian with Christopher Daniels at ringside against Chris Jericho, Sammy Guevara with Jake Hager as their corner man. And it was billed as a tag team title match, SCU, the new tag team champions, and two members of the Inner Circle, including the ringleader of Inner Circle, Jericho, challenging and trying to win all the belts. They want to win all the belts into AEW. So it was a nice match. Now, the first thing that was noticeable was when the ring announcer, Justin Roberts, announced that the match was a 60-minute time limit. This match didn't start until – it was 9:46 on my clock. In my house for a 10 o'clock ending show. And it's not like now NXT went until about 10:08, 10:09 last night with their 2 hour show on Wednesday nights. They have run over ability with USA, have long had it with USA. TNT used to give WCW Monday Nitro the ability to run over a few minutes. We have been told, and it's been the case for the first 6 weeks, that TNT is not giving run over time to Dynamite. Basically, it's over at 10 o'clock. At 10 o'clock, we're going to the next program. And so at 9:46, we're told there's a 60-minute time limit match. I'm already saying out loud, there's no way this one's going 60 minutes. Then during the match, I'm pretty sure it was Jim Ross who said this now that I think about it, but it's one of the announcers said, and I'm pretty sure it was Jim Ross, that if this match happens not to end before we go off the air, we'll keep the cameras rolling and we'll make it available on YouTube later, which I knew wasn't going to be the case for a couple of reasons. One, they wouldn't want to do that. They wouldn't want to have a Dusty type ending. They wouldn't want to have NWA Worldwide or the Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling show that used to air at 12 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturdays back in the old days, where they would often do that, give you a taste of a main event match and then not show you the end of it. So you'd never be satisfied as far as that goes. Make you come back next week, but you're still not satisfied. They're not going to do that on AEW because the hue and cry in this day and age would be just way too much to allow something like that to happen. And the other reason is that AEW actually records that show After Dark. Basically, when the TV show ends at the live arena, I'll know this because I was at the first show, the Washington, D.C. show. When the TV goes off the air at 10 o'clock, the house show part that goes from 10 to roughly 11, they bring some matches out. The announce crew stays there, and they actually record that for After Dark there. So if you have this match actually go on for 15, 20 minutes after 10 o'clock, you're eating into your time for After Dark. So they could have if the announcement had been during the match, hey, if this one doesn't end by 10 o'clock, we'll make it part of After Dark. That would have been different. But when you have an hour long web show that you have a dedicated audience towards, you don't want to screw that up. So all that said, this was going to end at 10 o'clock. Now where things went screwy here was, as we got to within 5 minutes and then within 4 minutes, within 3 minutes of the match, Sammy Guevara had been in the ring quite a long time. He tagged out, gave a hot tag to Chris Jericho. There was probably about 3 minutes left in the match. And then he got knocked out of the ring. The match turned into a Donnybrook. Whenever there's a hot tag, it tends to do that. And as we got within a minute of the show being over, we had Scorpio Sky and Chris Jericho in the ring, and actually Jericho getting offense on Scorpio Sky. Now, at this point, Jericho and Guevara are not going to win the titles. You don't want all the titles in one group, and you certainly don't want your world singles champion to be a world tag champion too. That's very awkward from a standpoint of booking. It just doesn't make sense with those props, titles or props. It doesn't make sense with those props to be all in one place. So, but Guevara was nowhere to be seen for Jericho to tag out, and so. I didn't see an explicit sign from a referee or anything else, but it was pretty clear. Jericho either sensed it or there was a sign that we just couldn't see on the TV broadcast, maybe coming from somebody offstage that was in Jericho's eyesight. Or maybe the referee leaned in with the earpiece, got the information from the back, and then leaned in with the earpiece and told Jericho what to do here. But essentially Jericho went for a body slam out of character. At the stage of a match, and then Scorpio Sky rolled him up into an inside cradle 1-2-3 pinfall. Jericho, the last 15-20 seconds of the show, goes ballistic, starts throwing tables, throwing stuff around, and drawing attention to the fact that it was his first loss in AEW. Of course, it's in a tag match, but it's his first loss. Now, here's the problem with that. Again, if you watch this, you didn't think much of it. And wrestling booking is it's not like your world champ can't be pinned in a tag match, but it's usually been the case that it's 99.9% of the time been the case that if you have your world singles champ pinned in a tag match, it's because the person pinning him is someone chasing him, and that pinfall is used as fodder for future discussion. Storyline development of, wow, see? I remember Ricky Morton got a pinfall on Ric Flair back in the Great American Bash back in 86. And that led to a singles match between Ricky and Ric Flair. And actually, there was a series of them. And apparently, we've been told many years since, Ricky Morton has told me personally this story himself, that he had been offered the world title and turned it down because if he would have taken that world title opportunity, it would have led to the end of the Rock and Roll Express, and Robert Gibson would have been out of a job, and he was too loyal to his buddy Hoot to throw him basically by the curb. Not a lot of guys would have done that, and Ricky probably, his lifestyle is not quite what it would have been if he was a former world champ. Maybe regrets it, but then again, he and Robert are in the WWE Hall of Fame, and they're still lifelong friends. They're still friends now. Still working tag teams now, whether that's good or not. But you see, that was an example of it. Flair took the fall in a six-man match to Ricky, and that was used again as fodder for, hey, look, this is our guy here. Our guy here, the challenger, got the fall. And that was to build up that storyline. I don't think Scorpio Sky is going to be pushed as a singles competitor to Chris Jericho. I hope not. I love Scorpio Sky. I'll say that. I think he's a great athlete. I think I agree with again. Jim Ross said this last night. He might be the best athlete right now in AEW. He might be the best athlete in all of pro wrestling, but he's not been given any time as a singles guy. He's currently a world tag team champion, and that ending had nothing to do with. Let's put Scorpio Sky personally over Chris Jericho. It was all about, oh crap, we have to end this match. And Jericho happens to be in the ring. Not a great use of time. Tony Khan has made it a point to say he's timing these shows out. Tony, you got to do a better job than that. You just exposed your world champion to a pinfall loss in a tag match that has nothing to build from. It's simply going to be something next week you'll ignore. So anyway, that's my rant there, a booking rant, and giving you a little bit of background on how things should be done and how they were screwed up last night. All right, well that's it. That's all I got. We will join. Let's see, kind of signposting what we do the rest of this week. I did another podcast today. I talked some UVA basketball and football, so that's completely different than wrestling, I understand. But I did one of those today, so if you missed that, if you're a UVA basketball football fan, you want to listen to that. Tomorrow, on Friday, I will have Jerry Carter on the long line. He's out on the West Coast, and he and I will talk sports, get you ready for the weekend, and more. So I want to thank you for listening to this podcast. Thank you for your support. If you have any questions, topics you'd like me to address in the future, AugustaFreePress2@gmail.com. On Twitter, @AugFreePress. Facebook, just type in Augusta Free Press. Send me a message. Love to hear from you. Thank you for your time. Have a great day.